There are two types of people in the world. I had a beloved teacher in high school that told me this, and it is very true. There are two types of people. Those who read the directions and those who do not. Now I'm going to ask, how many of you here today are proud direction readers? You read the directions. Okay, good. Direction readers are wonderful people. They buy the IKEA cabinet. They read the pictograms. They may even be true saints and actually check to make sure they have all the pieces. Now, let me ask the opposite question. How many of you are brave non-readers of directions? All right. And non-direction readers are also wonderful people. They buy the same IKEA cabinet, they toss the directions in the trash, and they build it their way, or some way. Anyway, it gets built. Now, my late friend Bonnie was a non-direction reader. Directions are for quitters, she would say. And usually this was immediately before she screwed the shelves of our new cabinet into something that looked like a triangle with three 90-degree angles. She didn't even get the idea of direction. She didn't want to read someone else's take on how to do it. She wanted to jump right in, get her hands on it. She actually couldn't bear to be still, to be aside from the thing. Sometimes this was wonderful. And I would see her with a screwdriver stuck behind one ear, busily working, and she'd say, "Stillness is overrated. My teachers told me in school, be still, be still, hush, be still, stillness is overrated." And then the handle would fall off of the cup she was gluing because she hadn't read the part about applying a thin coat to both surfaces and putting them together after 10 minutes. She would figure things out after the 78th or 85th or 100th time. She learned by disaster, joyfully, and sometimes by gluing her coffee cup to the cat. But for her, sometimes movement was a form of stillness. Jumping right in was a meditational practice. Stillness can look a lot of ways. Sometimes stillness makes all the difference. Back in 1952, there was a place called the Maverick Concert Hall in Woodstock, New York. And something amazing, or possibly amazingly weird, happened there. Some of you may be aware of this. There was an amazing concert scheduled that night. Lots of local composers, local musicians. The place was packed. Morton Feldman and Earl Brown were there. They were both composers who were local to the area. There was a whole group of vacationing members of the New York Philharmonic in the audience. So this is not, hey, we're out in the sticks and no one knows what's going on, so let's play a joke on them. Everyone was there because they wanted to hear the new pieces by composer John Cage. And John had a wry sense of humor and a brilliant mind. For the second piece called Water Music, pianist David Tudor, who was actually playing, started a stopwatch, sat down in front of the piano, closed the lid, and began a performance in which he never played a note. 4 minutes, 33 seconds of utter silence. And that eventually became the name of the piece, 4:33, 4 minutes, 33 seconds. Some people thought it was a joke. Somebody actually stood up and tried to get them to throw him out. John Cage did this deliberately. He wasn't kidding. This wasn't music that drew you in or made you listen. It didn't let you lose yourself in it. It was what he called a Zen musical experience. Every breath, can you imagine? 4 minutes, 33 seconds, not knowing that this was supposed to be what was happening. It's different when you're told, let's meditate for 4 minutes, 33 seconds. This is an audience dressed up expecting music. 4 minutes, 33 seconds. You know how agonizing sometimes it is for 20 seconds sitting in silence, waiting for me to shut up and hit the gong? 4 minutes, 33 seconds in silence, not knowing what's going on. The silence was deafening. Every noise made half the audience look around. They heard every truck backfire outside with the guys working on gravel. They heard every breath. Everybody who started coughing got half the heads in the audience to look to see what was going on. Every person who was there became part of the performance. Every bird that coughed in every tree out in the yard. Because everyone was waiting breathlessly to see what was going to happen, what was going on. And Cage created this after seeing the huge all-white paintings done by the artist Robert Rauschenberg. And if any of you ever get a chance to see them, they are not only stark white, they were deliberately created so that anything that lands on the paint, the style of paint he used and the way he put it on the canvas, anything is visible. A speck of dust, a light beam, a hair. You will never see those paintings the same way twice because literally the movement of the air changes the way they look that day. And when Cage saw what his friend had done with that and how much work it took to create that, it started him thinking. He also went during this thinking period to spend some time in a soundless chamber. The soundproof chambers where there absolutely is no sound that gets in or very little. It's a room scientifically designed to maintain absolute silence for acoustic testing. And he spent some time in one. Writer Will Herms writes, in his collection of essays titled Silence, Cage wrote about entering that chamber. And he could hear two sounds in the utter silence. And it took him a minute. But he realized he was hearing one very high-pitched sound and one very low-pitched sound. And this is in utter silence. And he didn't know what they were. And when he came out at the end of the time and he asked the sound engineer who ran the booth, you know, the booth isn't working. I could hear this high-pitched noise and this low noise. And the engineer said, no, you couldn't. You were hearing the high-pitched sound is your nervous system functioning. That's what it sounds like in utter silence. You're actually hearing your nervous system. And the low-pitched sound is your blood in circulation. He was hearing himself be alive at the most basic level, for the first time in his life. And Cage was astounded. It was an epiphany. He began to focus much of his musical attention on ambient and accidental sounds, and he said, until I die, there will be sounds, and they will continue after my death. One need not fear about the future of music. Any sounds may occur in any combination and in any continuity, but there will be music, there will be sound. He used stillness to give musicians permission to engage with sound in new ways. He used stillness to make people truly listen to themselves. The most important piece is my silent piece, he affirmed. I always think of it before I write the next piece. One critic called it the pivotal composition of the century. The man who was actually playing that day said, "It was the most intense listening experience I ever had in my life." In stillness, Cage found music. In stillness, Cage found himself. There's a man named Pyke Iyer. He wrote a lovely book called The Art of Stillness. I highly recommend it. And you can get the Kindle version for like $8. He was a friend of Leonard Cohen. And he said, "Going nowhere, as Leonard Cohen would later emphasize for me, isn't about turning your back on the world. It's about stepping away now and then so you can see the world more clearly and love it more deeply. The idea is choosing to sit long enough to turn inward," and that's a simple idea for him. He said, "If your car is broken, you don't try to find ways to repaint its chassis. Most of our problems, and therefore our solutions, our peace of mind, lie within. To hurry around trying to find happiness outside ourselves makes about as much sense," he writes, "as the comic figure in the Islamic parable who has lost the key to his living room. And so instead of looking in the house where it's dark, he goes out in the street because there's more light out there to look for the key that he lost in the house." Iyer writes, "We were reminded more than two millennia ago, it's not our experiences that form us, but the ways that we respond to them. A hurricane sweeps through town, reducing everything to rubble. One sees it as liberation, a chance to start anew, while another, maybe even his brother, is traumatized for life. There is nothing, either good or bad, as Shakespeare wrote in Hamlet, but thinking makes it so." And later in the book, The Art of Stillness, Iyer says, "Talking about stillness is really just a way of talking about clarity and sanity and joy that endures." And I started to think about this, and I thought, you know, it makes sense. When you are listening to a piece of music that you've never heard before, and it's one that you really want to hear. When you were listening to Greg and the band this morning, you didn't pipe up and start making noise at the top of your lungs. You didn't start singing along at the top of your lungs if you knew it. You don't become one with that experience and have to join in. You allow it to happen. You learn by experiencing, but not impacting the music in that case. You learn, in fact, by being still. When you rest in stillness, you notice the momentum of your habits and your urges and the way you think about thinking, but in that moment, you don't do anything about it. You actually experience the moment. You feel the wind on your skin, the sounds you never noticed. You hear the music. In that moment, you can tell what your body wants and needs, what your mind is experiencing. Stillness makes movement possible. Years ago, Gates McFadden, who played Dr. Crusher on Star Trek, she wrote that she had studied with a French dance teacher in Paris for years, and he made them do opposites. He made them study the opposites. So they learned mime. They studied mime to learn how to speak. He made them sit still for hours to learn how to dance, to find the opposite of things, to find the still spaces in things. Stillness gives something my friend Bonnie and her Escher shelves didn't always have. It gives perspective. It allows immersion in the moment rather than expecting you to act on the moment or to shape the moment. Stillness lets the moment simply be. Whatever you can observe is not you. It has its own way of existing in the world. And when you are truly still, your understanding of the things you see in the world will blossom. Stillness speaks to the quiet presence prepared to listen. And finding that space in a noisy world lets you escape from the stress and struggle of having to do something with or to every situation you encounter. It allows you to understand the truth in the world you are moving through, to differentiate yourself from your world. In stillness, as everything else falls away, all you are left with is you. In stillness, you learn who you are. In stillness, you find that you are perfect enough. In stillness, you find that you are whole. In stillness, you find that no matter how you approach things, whether you read the directions or jump in, you are enough. Peace, be still. Amen.